Purple by Srila Prabhupada. The exact color of the garment of the Supreme Lord is described as saffron yellow, just like the pollen of a lotus flower. The Kaustubha gem hanging on his chest is also described. His neck is beautifully decorated with jewels and pearls. The Lord is full in six opulences, one of which is wealth. He is very richly dressed with valuable jewels which are not visible within this material world. Lasha Pankaja Kinjalka Pita Koshe Shavashasham Sri Vatsa Vakshasham Brajat Kostumba Mukta Kandaram. His loins are covered by a shining cloth, yellowish like the filaments of a lotus. On his breast he bears the mark of Sri Vatsa, a curl of white hair. The brilliant Kostumba gem is suspended from his neck. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyanangana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Sri Chaitanya Manomistam Japitam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gitabmayam Tatati Svam Batandikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is Kapila's instructions on devotional service. We'll read a few verses previously. So by practicing the process of pranayama, one can eradicate the contamination of his psychological condition. And by concentrating the mind, one can become free from all sinful activities. By restraining the senses, one can free himself from material association. And by meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become free from the three modes of material attachment. When the mind is perfectly purified by the practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a cheerful, lotus-like countenance with ruddy eyes like the interior of a lotus and a swarthy body like the petals of a blue lotus. He bears a conch, discus, and mace in three of his hands. His loins are covered by a shining cloth, yellowish like the filaments of a lotus. On his breast he bears the mark of Sri Vatsa, a curl of white hair. The brilliant Kaustubha gem is suspended from his neck. So these are descriptions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Kapila Muni is explaining about the yoga system. So, the yoga system is described also in the Bhagavad Gita. And this yoga system is very much recommended, particularly for those who are in the bodily concept of life. The body is a machine. The functions of the body are mechanical. We can understand that this body is described in Bhagavad Gita as just like a machine, and the living entity is situated on this machine. So the whole material energy is a great machine. The material energy works under mechanical laws. It works under various conditions. So these conditions of life, they are the, if you like, the restrictive or controlling energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the body, as Krishna says, the living entities, they are my part and parcels, and they are mine, but due to conditional life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So life is a struggle with conditions. We are struggling against the conditions. So there are three qualitative measurements of conditions. There is good condition, mediocre, and bad conditions. Everyone can understand that. Sometimes you're in a good condition. Sometimes you're in a very mediocre mixture, good and bad. You can't say it's good, and you can't say it's really bad, isn't it? Just like life on this planet. You can't really say it's good. You couldn't say, well, I'm having a great life. And you couldn't say that I'm being tortured. You couldn't actually say you're being tortured. You're on the borderline. Borderline of having a good time and borderline of being tortured, isn't it? If you slip a bit that way, you have a good time. If you slip a bit that way, you get tortured. So the Earth planet is in the mode of passion. So predominant on this planet, everyone is predominantly in the mode of passion. Raja, Rajagun. So in the mode of passion, there is always distress. But there's also some happiness, because passion means fruit of activity. Fruit of activity means that there is some good result and some bad result. So the conditions here are in between. They're not heavenly and they're not exactly hellish. So Krishna says that the living entities, they are struggling with these conditions of life. This struggle for existence is going on account of the association with the mind, on account of association with the material body. So therefore, Devahuti is asking Kapila Muni, her son. Kapila is the son of Devahuti. So she's asking that her request is that I am always being harassed, or I am always being troubled by these senses. In other words, by the body. She can understand, even though she's a lady, a woman, she can understand with intelligence that she's always being harassed by the body. Any intelligent man can understand that this body is a cause of great anxiety. It's a cause of great suffering. If one is not convinced of this, then it won't be very long before the material world will actually remind you. Just like sometimes you forget how much suffering the body is, and every now and again Maya comes along and kicks you in the teeth. She mercilessly kicks you. In the material world, Maya is there to kick you mercilessly. One of the qualities of Maya is she has no mercy. She will kick you and kick you and kick you, and when you want to stop, she will kick you even harder. She will kick you even more. So the living entity is like a football in the material world. Sometimes he's getting kicked this way, sometimes he's getting kicked that way, this way, that way. And sometimes the kicks are very hard, just like there are different types of kicks, certainly. There's hard kicks, there's not so hard kicks, and there's extremely hard kicks. So depending on how hard the kick is, that you respond accordingly. The living entity responds accordingly. So the request of Devahuti is that, how can I get rid of the miseries of material life? This is the most prime importance of human form of life. It is the most essential thing to understand how one can get rid of the material contamination of life. That is what distinguishes the human being from the animals, is that one is intelligent to understand that this these conditions of the material world are not favorable. They are hostile conditions. They are not favorable for my ultimate pleasure. There are two types of pleasure. There is immediate pleasure, but there's also ultimate pleasure. Just like we can understand that in the material world, if you want to have a higher pleasure, then you have to make some sacrifice, isn't it? Just like if you want to be rich, you have to work, unless you're very fortunate and inherited money. But generally, if you want to be rich, then you have to perform some sacrifice. If you want to become very intelligent, very educated. If you want to become a PhD, then you must perform sacrifice. 5, 6, 10, 12 years of study. Hard study. Daily. If you want to become advanced in any particular science, then you need to perform some sacrifice. If you want anything in the material world, then there needs to be some sacrifice. But one has to understand what kind of sacrifice. That's very important, because there are many, many types of sacrifice. Actually, in the material world, we see that there are so many different sacrifices. Just like if you want to eat a good meal, you have to go in and cook it, isn't it? Sometimes when you want to eat a nice meal. So you want to eat the nice meal, but there's the austerity of cooking it. You have to go and buy the vegetables, buy this, buy that, get it all prepared, and then when you're just about to munch it, you realize, oh, I have to offer it, isn't it? So this way, you can understand that whenever there is some sukha, pleasure, there's also always running alongside there's some dukkha. What is dukkha? Dukkha means displeasure. So these things are very intrinsically mixed up. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, that it is like sweet rice with sand in it, the material world. Material pleasure is like having some sweet rice, but there's loads of sand in it. Now imagine if you're very, very hungry and you come back from a hard day on the street, you're freezing cold, and Ravi cooks some nice sweet rice, but he put in a bag of sand instead of sugar. Then you would feel it's like a particular type of frustration. Now if he gave you a bag of sand, you'd throw it back at him. But because there's a nice bowl of sweet rice, you're attracted. And you want to enjoy. But when you dip your spoon in, you find all the sand is in there. So that's the nature of the material world. Outwardly, it looks very nice. It is very alluring, very attractive. Just like our body, everyone is attracted to their own body, even if it's the ugliest thing on the planet, isn't it? But still we think, hey, it's not that bad. It's better than that guy anyway. So this way we are attracted to our body, even though there's practically nothing attractive about it. But somehow or other we found something attractive. We find we have this amazing ability. We have amazing ability to squeeze some pleasure where there's no pleasure there. To squeeze some illusion where there shouldn't be illusion. But we squeeze it out. We like to be content to think that, well, I didn't get such a bad bargain. I mean, there's people who got worse than me. But actually, this is all concoction of the mind. So, this material world appears to be very attractive, just like the sweet rice, but mixed in with that sweet rice is all sorts of what is actually dukkha, displeasure, or adversities. There's all types of adversities. So, when Devahuti is asking, Sri Devahuti inquired, "My dear Brahmana, does material nature give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible?" These are very nice questions. One is attracted eternally. Just think of that wording. One is attracted eternally. So somehow we have this attraction. We don't know how, but we have this immense attraction to the material energy. Why? Because we are very, very tiny. It is very natural for that which is very small to be attracted to that which is very great. That's a natural attraction. When something is very small and tiny, then we have a tendency to be attracted to something which is very big and powerful and great. So, we find that the variegatedness of the material world actually is very attractive to the conditioned soul. So therefore, this question by Devahuti is very sanguine. And she says, since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible? So this is very important. This separation of matter and spirit is the fundamental necessity, the extreme necessity of the living entity in the material world. Unless one is able to cut this connection, One has to cut the connection with the material world. Otherwise, one again has to come back into the material world in another type of situation. Already I'm in a situation, and intelligently I can understand that this situation is not very good. It's not a very good situation. So therefore, Kapila Muni explains to Devahuti, as there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. So this is very important. How does the separation come? So Kapila is giving a very good indication. He's giving a very important indication that the separation from the material world comes when one properly uses his intelligence. So there is, just as there is no separate existence of earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. So therefore, this is the key. The living entity is entangled by his consciousness. So the entanglement in the material world is that consciousness is mixed up. What is it mixed up with? It is mixed up with these three material modes of nature. Sattvam, Rajas, Tamas, Iti, Guna, Prakriti, Sambhava. Nirmahanti, Mahobhago, Dehi, Deinam, Avayam. That this entanglement in the material world is on account of consciousness being mixed up, what? With different qualities. So this Prabhupada gives a nice example of that. That just like water, rainwater is pure, but when it mixes with the earth, it becomes muddy. It becomes muddy on account of association. So the Prabhupada says in the purport, the example is given here that anything material has an aroma. The flower, the earth, everything has an aroma. If the aroma is separated from matter, the matter cannot be identified. If there is no taste to water, the water has no meaning. If there is no heat in the fire has no meaning. Similarly, when there is want of intelligence, spirit has no meaning. You see, when there is want of intelligence, then spirit has no meaning. In other words, when there is want of intelligence, spiritual life has no meaning. Isn't it? When there's want of intelligence, then spiritual life has no meaning. It becomes a useless ritual. It becomes a useless ritual. That's why we see there are so many religions today. They're simply useless rituals. The churches are big, big concrete buildings. And so many people go in there and they have some bell ringing or choir singing or something. And they go back out into their material life. You see, because of want of intelligence. When there is want of intelligence, there is no question of spiritual life. So therefore, only the most intelligent, isn't it, Andrew? Only the most intelligent can be a devotee. Because intelligence, what is the meaning of intelligence? Intelligence means consciousness. So what type of consciousness? Well, one has to analyze what type of consciousness, because just having consciousness doesn't mean spiritual life. Everyone's got consciousness. But what type of consciousness? So the consciousness is very, very important to be analyzed. That's why our society is called Krishna consciousness. Because without a distinct name, you can't say the International Society for Consciousness, can you? It wouldn't sound very, people say, consciousness? The International Society for Consciousness. Or you could call it the International Society for All Types of Consciousness. Isn't it? Or even the International Society for the Unconscious. So which one would it be? So which one could we give to ourselves if we were going to define ourselves? Would we call ourselves the Krishna conscious person, or the conscious person, or the semi-unconscious, or the totally unconscious? Huh? Which one will we allocate? What name will we allocate to ourselves? So this So here, Kapila Muni is very nicely describing that the only way, practically, the only way that one can get out of the material world is by buddhi yoga, the dhammi buddhi yogam tam, by use of the intelligence. Intelligence has to be used in a very dominant way, because intelligence is the next door neighbor to the soul, just like you have a neighbor next door. So there's the soul, and besides the soul, there is also super soul. So this super soul should be understood, because the super soul is there in the heart of all living beings. And Krishna says that I am the director. What is intelligence for? Intelligence is to give direction, isn't it? If you don't have any intelligence, there's no direction. So that's why generally the person who has the most intelligence is the director. If you have a company, generally you would think that the director should be the more intelligent, because one who gives direction, director. So generally you find that one who is to direct should be very intelligent. But it's important to understand that who's the most intelligent? Because if we need direction, then we need to have the most intelligent direction. So we should understand that the material world is also working under a certain direction. Krishna says, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Chacharacharam Itunanena Kuntaya Jagat Viparivartade. This material energy is working under my direction, isn't it? Krishna is explaining that he's directing the working of material nature. He also says that he is directing the living entities from within the heart. So that means that all direction is coming from Krishna. You see? All direction is coming from Krishna. But Krishna directs either in internal, or he also directs through his separated energies. These material energies, the material modes of nature, are also working as powerful influences on the living entity. So it says, hence, even though he is a passive performer of all activities, how can there be freedom for the soul as long as material nature acts on him and binds him? So these are all very important points which are raised by Devahuti. Even if the great fear of bondage is avoided by mental speculation and inquiry into the fundamental principles, it may still appear again since its cause has not ceased. So the Supreme Personality of God had said, one can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me. This is very important, that the devotional service must be very serious. If one does not take devotional service very seriously, that means one is not very intelligent. You see? How do you judge your intelligence? By how seriously you take devotional service. If you don't take devotional service very seriously, then you're not very intelligent. Simple as that. Because that means that you have no proper understanding, ignorance. So everyone in the material world is acting under ignorance in different levels and different shapes and forms. Everyone is acting under ignorance because the predominant nature of the material world is ignorance. So the Supreme Personality of God had said, one can get liberation by seriously discharging devotional service unto me and thereby hearing for a long time about me or from me. So this is very important. Hearing is extremely important, because without hearing, unless one hears, then how is it possible to develop the intelligence? You see? How is it possible? Just like, it's very practical. I think Gopal's giving class today. He's having his own class there. What verse is that? He's all right. He's cool. He's cool. So, this hearing is extremely important because everything that we understand in life comes from hearing. The first business, just like the child has no brain, very little consciousness. So, as the child grows up, the first business is the child has to hear. Without hearing, it is not possible for consciousness to develop in the material world. Because the experience of the material world is simply the interaction between the senses and the sense objects. All the experiences are the interaction between the soul manifested through the material body. Consciousness is manifested through the body, the subtle body, the gross body, and one is completely conditioned by phenomena, by material nature. Therefore, the Sankhya system is the analytical study to analyze an analysis of material energy. One should have a very clear understanding of how material energy works because one is a victim. One is completely victimized by the material energy. So therefore, one should understand how the senses are working, how the mind is working, how the mind is the, conductor of the material senses. And one should understand that there is also something more powerful than the mind. Many people, they don't know that there could be anything more powerful than their mind. They think that the mind is the reality. But actually there is something much more powerful than the mind, because above the mind is the intelligence. And the intelligence is directly connected to the Supersoul. So Krishna explains that for those who have a desire to gain material sense gratification, then Krishna gives them that type of intelligence. For those who want to worship the demigods and go to heaven, then Krishna gives them that type of intelligence. For those who want to become materially experienced, then Krishna gives them that type of intelligence. And for those who want to become devotees, who are serious about becoming devotees, then Krishna will give that type of intelligence. Yeya mam prapajyante. As they surrender to Krishna, Krishna simply rewards accordingly. Krishna is sitting as the neutral agent. Neutral means that he is not interfering with the minute independence of the living entity. So when the living entity wants to execute his material sense gratification, then, as Prabhupada used to say, man proposes and God disposes. So this disposing or this arrangement, nature is an arrangement. If you study nature, you'll find there's all types of arrangement. There's arrangement for spiders, there's arrangements for cockroaches, for rats, for lizards, for birds, isn't it? What is there? If you look out, the birds are living in a tree, there's some nice arrangement. They're protected. You can't get at the birds because you have to climb up these little branches and you may fall down and hurt your head. So you don't go after the birds because they're just situated. If you notice, all the birds, they go practically to the highest branches. So in the tree, there's nice arrangement. The birds, their food is there. They have their house there. They have a nice wife. They have their family, isn't it? So a nice arrangement is there. Then there's arrangement for the rabbits. They have little burrows. They come in and out. So if you study nature, nature's book, you'll find there's all sorts of arrangements. So this nature is providing all sorts of arrangement. And according to the living entity's qualification, he is moving up the ladder, getting good arrangement, getting mediocre arrangement, or getting very bad arrangement. So these different types of arrangement are there. Sattvam Raja Tamayati. According to the qualification of consciousness, consciousness is either elevated by pious activity or degraded by impious activity. So we see very carefully that there are different types of arrangement in the material world. But although we can actually study so many different types of arrangement, we have to understand who is the arranger. You see, it's not enough just to see that there's very good arrangement. Just like what is modern economic development? It's studying nature in order to make some nice arrangement, isn't it? Just like we need very nice luxurious goods. So we study sciences, how to turn nature into a very nice arrangement, isn't it? What is the use of that intelligence? They are using their intelligence to make wonderful arrangement. Just like you go and they have now super duper movie houses with supersonic sound and supersonic screen and super duper duper things and all happening, and you sit down there and you practically feel like you're shaking, the whole cinema is shaking, and there's very wonderful actors and they're highly experienced in showing the talent of acting, and you feel like this thing is really happening, and when there's some fearfulness you become fearful, and when there's happiness you become happy. So they have very nice technology, wonderful intelligence, wonderful display. Just like you can go 35,000 feet, you can go to the toilet up in the air, 35,000 feet. Isn't it? That's a wonderful arrangement. If you try to go to the toilet up in a tree, it'd be very difficult. But here you can fly 35,000 feet, and people are running in and out of the toilet and having a nice meal, watching television, and sitting back in their luxury reclining seats with their all now have their own individual TV screen in front of them. Isn't it? So, very intelligent arrangement. Use of the intelligence, as you can see, it has been used, but what has it been used for? It has been used to try and increase the arrangement. Why? Why? Because we think that by our arrangement, we can become happy. That is the fundamental misconception of material life. We think that by our arrangement, by us making some arrangement, we will be happy. So, therefore, this tendency to be intelligent. Everybody wants to be very intelligent. Therefore, they are chasing after PhD, MA, BA, so many different things. They want to be very, very intelligent. And what do they want to do? They want to show off the wonderful arrangement they made. Everybody wants to show off their new car, their big house, the beautiful girl they picked up, the nice bank balance. They want to show off how many credit cards they got and what is their spending power, what is their new clothes, just like they pay £500 a suit, £1,000. Some women pay $20,000 on a dress. Princess Diana used to spend £40,000 on one dress. Can you imagine? So that people can see, oh, look, such a nice arrangement. This person has some power, has some ability to actually make an arrangement in the material world. So all of this artha, what we call artha, what is the meaning of artha? Artha means where there is some economic development, social development, mechanical development, technological development, mundane knowledge development, so many different developments. So that is a sign of intelligence. And a sign of intelligence is when there's a very, very nice arrangement. But if one was really intelligent, one could understand that who's made this big, big facility for making all these arrangements? Isn't it? Just like we are picking up some material, we are picking up some things from the material world, and with those things we're making a nice arrangement. Just like we're making motor car with sleek engines and beautiful upholstery and nice speed, 200 miles, 300 miles an hour. So we are picking up these things, but no one is questioning that who has arranged these things. We are secondary arranger, not even secondary, but we are lower arranger. But who has made the higher arrangement? Just like if you come into someone's house and there's very beautiful arrangement and you take advantage of that, then at least you should have the decency to try and understand who is the proprietor, who is the owner, who's the one who's actually arranged this nice facility. So if you go into someone's house and they have luxury house and you start enjoying everything without acknowledging them, well, that will be very, offensive. Or inhospitable, or insulting. Antisocial,
insulting.
Yes, that would be insulting, rude, crude. If you do like that, so generally, what sort of person behaves like that is a thief. If a thief breaks into a nice, luxurious house, then they don't show any respect for the owner, isn't it? They just simply spoil everything, pull all the cupboards out, smash the window, get this, get that. Because their business is how to grab some facilities and take them away, enjoy them. So they are very anxious, not very interested in the proprietor of the house. As a matter of fact, they'd be more than glad not to bump into the owner of the flat, isn't it? Isn't it? They would be very happy not even to hear about them. They don't even want to see their photograph inside the house because it makes them feel a little guilty that they're smashing up this person's property. But their business is to separate, to gain some facilities and take them away and enjoy them themselves. So they have no interest in who's arranged the nice. You never see a thief going in and leaving a note saying, oh, this nice decoration you made, and I really enjoyed the bedroom. It was very nicely done, and it's nice the way you brought in that jacuzzi from Italy with the nice marble. No, they're not interested in these things. Their main gain is how to gain something from their efforts. So the living entity is like that very much in the material world, that he has no interest. His intelligence is not interested in understanding who is the arranger, who is the supreme controller, who's the one who's actually working behind the material nature. So, why does he not have that intelligence? Because, as it says, Namam das kritina mudha prapadyante naradama maya apritya gyanam masuram bhav mashritya. That these types of consciousness, what type of consciousness? Those who are Namam das kritina. Das kritina means pious activities. Das kritina means those who are engaged in impious activities. Those who are impious. Impiety means sinful activity. Namam daskritina mudha. Mudha means those who are simply like donkeys. They work according to the rules of their master, just like a donkey. A donkey, you give him a good kick, he works. Isn't it? So, therefore, if you beat the donkey nicely, he'll work nicely. If you stop beating him, he'll probably lie down and have a snooze or whatever. So you have to beat him. So they're mudha. Mudha are those that are completely controlled by the laws of material nature. They're mudha, they're asses. And you can see many of them on the street every day. They're all going around doing exactly the thing they did yesterday, they did the day before, they did the day before, they did last week, they did the same thing last week as they did last month, they did the same thing last month as they did the year before, they did the same thing last year as they're going to do this year. And this is chewing on the chew. They're the same mudhas. They work, they get up, they have their cup of tea or whatever they're going to have, they watch their telly, they have their little bit of this and their little bit of that. And that way they go on. But they're no different from the animal because they don't make any adjustment to their life. They simply work like fools. They think that by hard work, by obeying the laws of society, by obeying the laws of this, by obeying the law, they think that they will become happy because they are under the impression that by this systematic effort of hard work,
that they're becoming happy. So they're the mudas, like ass. So this Duskritina Mudha, Prabhupada did Naradama. Naradama, Nara means human being, and Dhamma means the lowest type of human being. They are the lowest type. We see that there are these thugs and what do you call hooligans, and these simply disgusting human beings, isn't it? You can meet them. They're disgusting. They are what do you call, like the garbage of society, the refuge, the Naradama, the lowest of mankind. They're not just on the borderline of becoming a hog. As a matter of fact, they even start to look like hogs. So they are the lowest of mankind. And Maya Aprita Jnanam Asuram Bhav Masrita, that those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion. So it's not that knowledge is there and knowledge is not there. It is there, but their knowledge is stolen by illusion. So therefore, one should be very careful, because what one thinks to be knowledge is actually illusion. You see? Sometimes you think that that's intelligent. You may do something, you think that was very intelligent. But actually, it's a useless activity. It appears to be very intelligent, but that is stolen by illusion. In other words, the whole thing is illusionary. One should understand that the material life is illusionary. Therefore, any kind of intelligent endeavor is illusionary, useless. Isn't it? You see? Just like Prabhupada gives the example. You may be a very powerful swimmer, but if you fall into the Atlantic Ocean, what is the use of your swimming? Isn't it? You may think that I'm a very, very powerful swimmer. That may be true. In a swimming bath, you could say that, yeah, this person's a really strong swimmer. But if you stick the same person in the Atlantic Ocean and they have to swim from Ireland to America, something like that, then you'll see that what is the use of your swimming? So similarly, one may be very intelligent, but what is the use of that intelligence if one is actually trying to stay in this material world? Then as long as one is under the powerful illusion of the material world, then whatever one does, so-called intelligently, it is actually just another manifestation of illusion. It may appear to be very intelligent, but it's actually just another manifestation. Just like you see people, they fly on a jumbo jet, they have the same problems when they take off and the same problems when they land. And even while they're flying, they create more problems. Most people actually suffer when they travel. Now, the traveling arrangement is very wonderful, but still they're suffering. They're actually suffering. If you study them, they're suffering. And you will also suffer if you fly. You'll suffer. It may seem like a happy thing, but after you've been flying. Why? Because you're suffering before you fly. You're suffering when you fly, and you suffer when you land. The flying hasn't changed anything, because the misery that you took on the plane remains on the plane and you take it off at the other side. It doesn't matter that you've gone somewhere else, it just means now you're miserable somewhere else. Previously you were miserable in that place, now you've gone somewhere else to be miserable, isn't it? And then you're thinking, well, if I go back there again, I'll be happy. So they go flying back again. And again they're miserable over there, and they think, well, oh, I go back there again. And this way, they're bouncing around like a football in the material world. One person is thinking, well, here's a good arrangement. I'll go to America. It looks pretty good over there. They've got nice arrangements. So they go there to be miserable. And when they're there, they think, oh, no, England was better. These people here, they all have guns. And so they go back to England, and they're miserable there. So all that one is doing is actually increasing the illusion. Because the material energy is very, very powerful, mama maya dharatiya. Therefore, whatever intelligent arrangement you make in the material world, it simply increases the problems. Why? Why does it increase the problems? Because one actually is simply dealing with ignorance. What we call knowledge in the material world is not knowledge at all. It is called apritigyan. Gyan means knowledge. Aprita gyan means knowledge when it's stolen. intelligence when it's stolen. You see? Intelligence can also be stolen. Just like your life has been stolen from you. You think you're having your life. You're not. Your life was stolen from you. It's been stolen from you by Maya. You are living according to Maya's dictation. You think that you're doing what you want to do. But there's actually absolutely nothing you do in this life which is what you want to do. What you're doing in life is you're doing what your mind wants you to do, what your senses want you to do, what your false ego wants you to do, what your contaminated consciousness wants you to do. That's what you're doing, but you think I'm doing it because of what? Because of illusion, because of ignorance. Therefore, the yoga system was to mechanically bring the body under control. If you bring the body under control, then you can begin to realize that, yeah, hey, look, this is just a machine. So what do? You stop it breathing. Hey, look, I can stop my body breathing. You stop thinking about mundane things. You retract the senses from the sense objects. Then what do? You bring the mind under control by various types of austerities. So that by fasting, by just like in the Himalayas, there are many yogis, they sit in the freezing cold in wintertime up to their neck. Now, if you've been to those rivers, even in the summertime, they're ice cold rivers. Ice, absolutely ice. They sit in there for months with the water up to here. And some of them underwater. And in the hot summer, they build fire. They sit in the middle of the fire in the hot, blazing hot sun. Now, why do they do all these things? Because they have to prove, if you like, to their intelligence that actually I am not this body. So therefore, by controlling the body, in other words, just like if you are being controlled by a higher force, then one has to intelligently understand what that force is. One must have a proper understanding in order that one should be able to, if you like, escape. Just like if you want to get out of prison, you have to know where the door is, isn't it? There's no good trying to escape out of prison and you end up in the toilet. You might cut a big hole out of the wall and then end up in the toilet. At least you should know where the exit is, how to get out. So you must understand what is the arrangement. So Sankhya means sunk. To count, to study, what is the arrangement of material energy? What is the arrangement? How Maya is arranged? How she works? And then, when you are intelligently understanding how the material energy works, then one can actually try to make proper adjustment. But this adjustment is not a material adjustment, rather it is a spiritual adjustment. So, as it says here, the influence of material energy has covered the living entity. And thus, it is as if the living entity was always in a blazing fire. But by the process of seriously discharging devotional service, this influence can be removed, just as wooden sticks, which causes a fire, are themselves consumed by it. You see? So this is the power of devotional service. That devotional service is so powerful that it consumes all of the material contamination within the heart. Therefore, there is cleansing of the heart. There is cleansing of the mind. There is cleansing of the intelligence. This is the cleansing process. by discovering the faultiness of his desiring to lord it over material nature, and by therefore giving it up, the living entity becomes independent and stands in his own glory. This is very important, that one has to stand in his own glory, because the soul is glorious. Why is the soul glorious? Because it's part and parcel of the most glorious, Krishna. So therefore, this Krishna consciousness system is actually, what is the system? Is that to actually come in touch with the super soul who is situated in the heart. Krishna is in the heart. He is there in his full glory. So when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, as we're reading here, then actually Krishna reveals himself from within. So that beautiful form of the super soul is manifested in the heart. And there one can actually see Pramanjara Charita Bhakti Valochanena, that one has eyes have become anointed with the salve of love, then one can actually see Krishna situated within the heart. As Lord Chaitanya says, I do not have a mind. My mind is Vrindavan. So just think of that statement. Lord Chaitanya is saying that I do not have a mind. My mind is Vrindavan. So the mind of the devotee is actually the play, the sporting activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the mind of the devotee. Lord Chaitanya's mind was the sporting ground of Krishna Leela. So Krishna consciousness means to come to that platform where one is actually so Krishna conscious that Krishna manifests himself within the mind, within the heart. So that is not a very cheap state. That is a very, very difficult state. But in higher level of consciousness, then one's mind becomes the sporting ground of Krishna's pastimes. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam? Is the sporting pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, why is the Srimad Bhagavatam so important? Because if you study, if you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, Naista Prayeshu Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Yatam Shloke Bhakti Bhavati, that this, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome within the heart. What is that trouble? That trouble is forgetfulness, illusion, lusty desires, false identification, false ego, anger, frustration, illusion, attachment. These are all the dirty things within the heart, isn't it? So you have to get rid of those dirty things. And unless you make a very concerted effort, a very intelligent effort, a very powerful effort to actually hear regularly, to read, to meditate upon Krishna. What is this yoga process? It's simply meditation. When the mind is perfectly purified by the practice of yoga, one should concentrate. So this concentration of the mind is very, very important. Therefore, this chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be done with great concentration. Otherwise, one can easily become distracted from this transcendental process. Also, the hearing, the reading of the transcendental shastras should be done with great concentration, with great meditation, with great endeavor. Because in Kali Yuga, kirtana is the only process. Harinama, 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 ivakevalam, kaloa nasteva, 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 gatiranka. Then in Kali Yuga, this yoga system is no good because people can't concentrate for very long periods of time. They can't concentrate, even for 5 minutes. If you sit to meditate, you start thinking about so much rubbish. So much rubbish will pour into the mind. Even when you start your japa, you start thinking about everything you never even thought you needed to think about, isn't it? Suddenly it pours into the mind. So many things are coming into the mind. Everything comes into the mind except Krishna. One time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was asked, is there anything in this world which is, anyone in this world who's adverse to the Bhagavatam? He said, every single thought that comes out of the mind of man is adverse to the Bhagavatam. Because in the material world, our thoughts are mixed up with false ego, false identification, illusion, attachment, bewilderment, tendency to commit mistakes, tendency to be cheaters. So many different faults are there. So this world is an ocean of faults. Ocean of faults. So why should we take shelter in an ocean of faults? Then we will become faulty. Isn't it? If we understand that the material world is an ocean of faults, then why do we take shelter here? Because we're not convinced. We take shelter here because we're not convinced of a higher existence. Therefore, Prabhupada once said, your only problem is none of you believe in Krishna. That is your real problem. Lack of faith, because there's doubt, because there's no real steadiness. Because one is doubting whether this is true or not, or just fairy tales. So therefore, there's no determination. There's no determination. Without determination, there's no faith. You see, faith and determination are both intrinsically linked. You can see this practically. When someone has a lot of faith, they have a lot of determination. Isn't it? Just like the kami, they have a lot of faith in the monetary system or the financial systems. So they're very determined. They don't mess around. They have regular meetings, get-togethers, isn't it? Kamis, they're constantly meeting, constantly communicating. More and more information, how to get better and better at whatever material pursuit they have. Why? Because they have tremendous faith in what they're doing. Therefore, they want more and more knowledge to help them. Their goal is very, very fixed up. So this, obviously, Atmika Buddhir, a.k.a. Kuru Nandana, without this single-mindedness, determination and faith, it is not possible to advance in spiritual life. If one is trying to, if you like, paddle along or just float along in devotional service, just sort of get by every day. Oh, I got by another day. Whew, that was close. I just made it. Isn't it? If one actually has this kind of determination where any moment he can be blown out the window, gone forever, then that's very precarious. We see it, that there are many examples of great souls trying very hard, and suddenly, boom, Maya comes. One moment, finished, everything finished. Not completely finished, but like finished. So therefore, that is because when the determination weakens and the faith weakens, if one's faith becomes weak, then determination becomes weak. So therefore, this hearing cannot be stressed enough. Because this hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing transcendental knowledge. Why? Because it comes from the super soul. The super soul is directing from within, but also from without. Krishna is also without. He has manifested himself in these transcendental living. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the Vedas. By these Vedas, I am to be known. But I am also the compiler of the Vedas. You see? So this is called support. There is Krishna the enjoyer, but there's also Krishna the supporter, one who supports. Just like if you want to create anything, it needs support, isn't it? Isn't it? Just like we're going to talk so many plans now, we'll do this with that, but we need support. We may have so many brilliant ideas, but where is the support? You see? So, in the same way that Krishna is supporting from within, but he's also supporting from without. Outside, he is also coming in so many support. So, guru means one who gives support. So, Krishna is giving support. Guru is not a singular thing, it's plural. It's an absolute thing that when one becomes a devotee, then Krishna arranges the material world to give you support in your devotional service. Therefore, you have association of devotees, you have the transcendental literatures, association with a pure devotee, you have Krishna Prasadam. You see, all these things are very nice. If you take Krishna Prasadam, you're not attracted to eating other things, isn't it? If you take the association of devotees, then you can free yourself from all sorts of unwanted habits, isn't it? You can, just like we are all sitting here, but because we're sitting here amongst each other, if we weren't sitting here as association with devotees, we'd be sitting in some other situation. God knows what it would be, isn't it? God knows who we'd be sitting with, what we'd be doing, what we'd be eating, what we'd be thinking. Try and imagine now, if you never met devotees, what you'd be doing at this moment, isn't it? What sort of life you'd be living? So, therefore, association of devotees, that is also support. Krishna is giving support. So don't neglect that support. If you neglect, then Krishna, you are neglecting Krishna. When there is neglect, then the problems come in. Because there's neglect. Just like we neglect our rounds, then we wonder why our mind is going all crazy, why we're lusting after women, why we're running after this and running after that. Isn't it? Because as soon as you become neglectful, then Krishna reciprocates. You see? Krishna reciprocates. Just like Prabhupada used to talk about that picture of Krishna, he's holding a cow, but Prabhupada said, notice, he's not grabbing the cow. His hand is there. The cow can move away. The calf. Calf can move away how it wants. Krishna is not attached. So Krishna is neutral. In one sense, he wants to see the individual desire of the devotee. So he creates arrangement, very wonderful arrangement, by which one can always make a choice because we're neutral. So we can move this way or that way. So Krishna has made such nice association. We have the scriptures, devotees, prasadam, temples. So don't neglect these things. As soon as you neglect, you're ruined. Because they are your guru. Guru doesn't mean just one person. Guru means many things because they give support. To give you support to serve Krishna. That is the meaning of guru. To give you support to see Krishna. That is the meaning of guru. To give you support so as that you can go back to home, back to Godhead. That is the meaning of guru. So Krishna comes in different types of support. So just like this Vibhumangal Thakur, he is thanking a prostitute because she gave him support in his spiritual life. You see? She actually chased him away. Go to Vrindavan. What are you doing here chasing after this bag of skin and bone and stool? Go to Vrindavan and find Krishna. So that supported his intelligence, isn't it? Good instruction. She said if you had the same determination for Krishna, you would become a pure devotee. And he did. He became a pure devotee. So just hearing once. You see how Krishna is speaking once. If you catch up once, you can go back to home, back to Godhead. And if you don't catch up, you can stay here billions of lifetimes. How important that hearing is. You see, Vibhumangal Thakur was one of the greatest Vaishnavas. One of the only books that Lord Chaitanya would read was written by Vibhumangal Thakur. So just see, he only read a few particular descriptions of the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. One of them was written by Vibhumangal Thakur. And how did he come to such an exalted position that even Lord Chaitanya would only read his books? Because he heard once, properly. Once he heard. And who did he hear from? A prostitute. Not a Mahabhagavat, Paramahansa, sannyasi visiting from Vrindavan and quoting 50 million verses. No, he heard from a whore. A prostitute. You see? So, you can pick up the right sound, even if it's coming from a prostitute. And it can make you perfect in life. So what to speak of those sounds that are coming from Srimad Bhagavatam? Then how much benefit they can give? But the difficulty is we don't pick any up. We don't pick any up because we're not studying. We're not reading. We're not interested. We want to find out who's the latest victim or who this gossip or that gossip or what happened to that person when they arrived there and what this, that. So many things are very enthusiastically aspired for us to hear. But Krishna's pastimes, they're very low on our agenda. Why? Because we have no faith in what has been said or what is there, because intelligence is cloudy. So therefore, this intelligence is very important. Without intelligence, there is no meaning to spiritual life. Because the intelligence and consciousness are intrinsically connected. Without consciousness, there's no intelligence. So if you have very little intelligence, generally you can understand that you have very little consciousness. Just like if you see a big, big elephant. It may look he's very big, but he has no intelligence. So his consciousness is very little, isn't it? You can think because he has a big body, he must have big consciousness. But it's not a question of big, big body. Just like a mountain has a big body, but a little ant is more powerful because he can move according to his own desire. He can move this way. So the ant is more than the big, big mountain. So having a body, big body, does not mean intelligence. Intelligence means to understand the difference between matter and spirit and who is the controller of both. So if one is fixed in that understanding, then he is intelligent. So therefore we can understand that 99.999% of the population have no intelligence, even though they appear to have so much intelligence. So, is there any questions at all? Anyone have any questions? Points?
You said that if you try and understand the forces which are greater than us acting upon us, and you also said something like that we're doing what our mind, our polluted mind wants, our senses, our body, our contaminated intelligence, we're doing what they want. Now, one thing would seem to imply is dead matter can't want, but want is like willing. So willing, thinking, feeling, willing implies a conscious living being.
Mm.
So the intelligence, mind, false ego are described as subtle material elements, and matter is dead. So how can we understand that these forces or these subtle elements are wanting something different than we want, or that there's a different influence than the soul?
So Prabhupada says that spiritual life means to declare war on the material energy. It is a declaration of war. So just like when there's war, the enemy takes over certain strategic positions, isn't it? Suppose you're at a war. The first thing when an enemy goes into a town, it takes over the radio station, isn't it? Radio and the television. And then it starts to broadcast propaganda. Now that propaganda makes all the difference. Just like Hitler, when he wanted to take over Germany, he gave everyone a free radio. But there was only one channel, and it so happened to be run by the Nazis. Surprisingly enough, there wasn't a load of channels. But everyone had a free radio, and they thought, wonderful, that was Goebbels. He was a very intelligent guy, Goebbels. He was the public relations guy for Hitler. And he did a huge success, huge. So he was very intelligent because of propaganda. You see, he had to make good propaganda. So he was telling the German people that this Hitler is a very nice guy. And not only is he a nice guy, but he's very, 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 very patriotic. He wants to help Germany become a very powerful force in Europe. And he wants us to reestablish the fatherland that we lost when the British defeated us, because the Germans were defeated in 1914 to 18 World War. So they always had this inferiority. So he actually, what did he do? He very cleverly got their nationalistic spirit up. And their yes, Germans, they love to be the best machines. So he mobilized this huge army. Huge, amazing they had the Germans had amazing weaponry. Amazing, isn't it? You look at their Stukas and Messerschmitts, and they were building V2 rockets and very, very powerful machinery. They had the best cars, the best machines. They were actually practically invincible. So Hitler, what did he do? He made very nice propaganda. You see? So what is the business of the mind? It's propaganda, isn't it? Your mind is always giving you propaganda. Hey, look at that girl. She really likes you. I saw the way she looked at you. Did you notice that? You see? She actually thinks you're a real killer. Well, I'm not that good. No, no, you are, you are. You are. You think you're not, but she thinks you are. So, the mind, Krishna says, I'm contemplating the senses. One develops attachment. So this propaganda is to get attachment. Hitler wanted everyone to get attached because he was going to attack Poland, France, Italy. You know, he was going to attack all these countries. So one had to become very attached to being German, to being the fatherland, the Third Reich. Isn't it? So he got everyone really attached. These people were ready to go out there. He even had them where he said, what do you want, tanks or butter? And they wanted tanks. Forget the butter. So the point is that the nature of the material energy is that she is working on the subtle plane. On the subtle plane, because that is the intelligent plane, you see. Maya is not stupid. Maya, material energy, is manifested by the subtle and gross laws of material energy. So this subtle propaganda is there. Coming from where? False ego. Ahankara. From the false ego of the mind, all of this propaganda is coming. Very powerful propaganda. First propaganda is that I'm this body. That's the first propaganda. So your mind thinks, I'm this body. It feels like I'm the body, doesn't it? Yeah. If I scratch, I feel good. If I have a nice meal, I feel happy. If I have some sex, it feels great. If I watch a movie, my mind's happy. So, sure, it feels like it. So this is the nature of the false ego, that the powerful force of illusion is there in the powerful identification with the material body as the self. And from that comes so many other different types of consciousness according to association. According to the association, because when you have a body, you don't just have a body, you have association. The body has association. So this extension of the body means the relationship between the body, between the senses and the sense objects, phenomena, material phenomena. So therefore the propaganda is that I am this body. As soon as I think this body, then I start to relate to I and mine. Mine means things related to the body. This is my country. Right? My country. Just like Americans. 200 years ago, the Indians were running around on their saddles, rolling around the hills, and then the Americans came from Europe. They were nothing to do with America. They had no right to be there. They were complete plunderers, thieves, rogues, pilferers, killers, murderers, savages. They were the real savages. The Indian people were just living there. But in came these hordes of savages and destroyed them all, and now they're proud to be American. Fly the Reunion Jack, because I'm a Yank, I'm an American. We're the most powerful country in the world. So all of this propaganda is going on. But the reality is they're a bunch of rogues, thieves, scoundrels, murderers, cheaters. They came in and destroyed a whole race of people. Same with the Jews. The Jews went in and kicked out all the Palestinians from their country and then said, hey, we're Jews. This is our land. You see? So this propaganda is there because that's the nature of the mind. The mind is always giving very nice illusionary propaganda. And because the material energy is working in a very wonderful way, therefore, all of these things go to confirm. Everything is there to confirm your illusion. Material energy is always there to confirm your illusion. Just like you're thinking, I'm English, and you meet another Englishman, and he says, hey, you're English, I'm English, isn't it? So you think, yeah, that proves it. I thought I was English, now he says I am. So in this way, the Maya is extended in a very complex and very wonderful way to make one feel. This propaganda is there. So propaganda means from the intelligence and the mind, contaminated intelligence, contaminated consciousness, so many, what is coming? So many contaminated ideas are coming. And that contaminated subtle consciousness is manifesting in gross consciousness. The gross body, the gross is manifested from the subtle. So therefore, your subtle body is a manifestation of your forgetfulness in your last life. Krishna says, at the moment of death, whatever consciousness you have, that becomes your next body. Isn't it? You know that verse, Ravi? Did you learn that verse? Huh? You must have. Huh? Who knows that verse? Bhagavad Gita. Speak. Exactly. What is the translation? Huh? I'll give it in Hungarian then. We can understand. Who knows the translation of that? What is the translation of that?
Whatever you think about at the time of death, that state will attain without fail.
Exactly. So therefore, from the subtle, the gross comes. So what happens then? Because the gross is there, you become absorbed in the gross, and that becomes the parent of the subtle. This is the intricacies of matter. That just like your subtle body is thinking that I should have a nice big palace house and get a beautiful wife and etc., etc. And then those things dominate your subtle, isn't it? See the attached, the entanglement? So out of your mind, these things come. Just like you're walking down the street, you see? And out of your mind, you say, hey, that's a nice girl. I'd like a relationship with her. So next minute, you're stuck with her for 50 years. And that drives you mad. So after a while, you're going insane. You're thinking, boy, if only I hadn't have thought that. You see? So the gross becomes the parent of consciousness. You see? All of these things are produced from the subtle, but when they become gross, they again affect the subtle. So therefore, this endless mutation is going on between subtle and gross. But both gross and subtle are both Maya. Whatever is going on in the subtle mind is just as much Maya as what's going on in the gross plane. So you can't think that, oh, because it's subtle, therefore it's spiritual. People sometimes they falsely think that because something is subtle, therefore it's spiritual. Or something, there's something better about it, you see? So they think that, okay, I can understand I'm not the body, but then they go, they take part in philanthropic ideas and opening schools and hospitals, and they become do-gooders to others and helpers to others, and they think that this is spiritual. You see, then they think there's some sort of spirituality about that. But it's completely mundane. 100% mundane. But they think that, well, it's better than robbing people, murdering them, killing them, cheating them, pilfering. It's better, but it's not spiritual. So therefore, that's why Krishna says, give up your so-called morality, your so-called, intellectualization, your so-called good ideas, and surrender unto me. That's why Krishna didn't speak the Bhagavad Gita in a temple. He spoke it in a battlefield because he wanted to prove that there is no material consideration for spiritual life. You can't put on a material consideration and call that spiritual. There's nothing material in spiritual life. So these subtle material ideas like be good, do good, help the poor, help the needy, open hospitals, dig wells, help this and help that and do this and do that. These are all completely, utterly Maya. And whereas Arjuna, chopping people up, chopping their arms up, sticking knives in them, swords in them, blowing them up with brahmastras or whatever, completely spiritual. 100% spiritual. Now, doesn't make any sense because many people get bewildered that how can something spiritual be so violent? But that shows that actually our idea of what is spiritual is complete concoction, because we think that spiritual shouldn't be violent, but God is the most violent. God, there's no one more violent than God. You can't find anyone more violent than God. He's killing babies, he's killing old lepers and old handicaps. He's killing people who are in wheelchairs, he's killing people who are ugly, he's killing people who are penniless, paupers, refugees in Rwanda, refugees in Ethiopia. He's murdering them all. Isn't he? If he's not doing it, then who's doing it? Krishna says material energy is working under my direction. So that means whatever killing is going on, it's Krishna. So that means that Krishna can kill because he's God. You see? So this creation, maintenance, and destruction, they are all manifestation of God. So not that your idea of God, that God can create. Oh yes, everyone can identify that. Yeah, God should be a creator. Sure, because you can enjoy it when he creates it. When he takes it away, that's not very spiritual, is it? That's not very spiritual. I mean, it's all right for him to give things, But he shouldn't take them away, because that's not very spiritual to be taking things away. So when he takes away your mummy and your daddy and your brother and your sister and your uncle and your great-grandfather, when he takes away your money, when he takes away your good looks, when he takes away your body, when he takes away the whole lot, then that's not spiritual. Spiritual is when you go to heaven and you have a nice time and there's lots of beautiful ladies there and beautiful fountains and lots of nice trees and fruits and nice dinners, curd sabjis. That's spiritual, you see? So these are the ideas that invade the mind of the mundanist, that they think that something spiritual should be nice. You see? So therefore, Jesus Christ was very nice. So they always remember Jesus Christ. He was very, very nice. What happened when he went in and beat everyone up in the temple? And kicked them. And threw their tables out and threw them out. Was that not a nice thing to do? That was violence. Christ was also violent. So they ignore that and say, oh no, well, you know, maybe he got a little hot-headed that day. But the real Christ was the one curing the lepers and giving food to the needy and etc., etc. So these are all mundane ideas. Therefore, Krishna says, give up all your nonsense. Surrender unto me. Give up all your nonsense. Whether it's good nonsense or bad. Just like Prabhupada said, if you have stool, if it's hot or cold, what does it matter? You may say that hot stool is a lot better than cold stool. But the point is that the material world, Krishna says, is not a nice place. And whatever goes on there is not very nice. You may think it's nice, or you may think it's not nice. That doesn't matter. It's not nice. Why? Because it's illusionary. And therefore, Krishna came to show. To show what? To show that spiritual life can be practiced on a battlefield, because it is directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it is beyond material consideration, beyond material association. Arjuna went back to home, back to Godhead, for killing people. You see? Now, if Arjuna would have left the battlefield and gone into the caves and became a hermit and fed the little deers and gave food out to the little lizards and everything, everyone would have said, oh, what a great soul Arjuna was. By material estimation, he would have been actually respected as being a great soul who renounced the kingdom of the Kurus, who renounced the battle, who went into and became a great hermit. But he would have been totally in Maya. But by staying on the battlefield and by immersing himself in the blood and the slaughter and the killing, on behalf of Krishna, he became, still this day, 5,000 years ago, Arjuna is known throughout all of the, Vaishnava world as the greatest devotee of Krishna. Even though he did all these things. Bhima who ripped open the heart. Isn't it? What did he do? What did Bhima do? Huh? He ripped open the heart of who? Yeah, and took out his heart and drunk the blood. So, not exactly the story of St. Francis of Assisi. So therefore, one cannot necessarily understand the activities of a Vaishnava, because as long as they're done by Krishna's desire, then they're spiritual. So this is the important factor, that one has to act according to Krishna's desire. So that is the important aspect. Whatever comes out of the mind, if it's directly related to Krishna, and if it is can be confirmed by Guru Shastra Sadhu, then that is a spiritual thing. Whatever else comes out of the mind is rubbish. Absolute rubbish. In black and white. Any other questions?
There's a verse in the Bhagavatam, second chapter, first canto, where by serving devotees who are completely free from vice, great service is done. By that service, one gains infinity for hearing chanting, messaging with Krishna. So, the service comes first before hearing.
Sorry?
The service comes first before one can hear properly. One has to serve.
But if you don't hear, how can you serve? You have to, just like Krishna says, Tadviri Paripatena Paripashena Seva Upatek Shanti Tegyana Janina Tattva Darshana, that one should approach the spiritual master. But the idea is that this hearing has to be there because the spiritual master has to tell you how to serve him. If the spiritual master wants milk and you bring him water, that is your nonsense. That will not please him. If I'm dying for a cup of milk and you bring me a cup of prune juice, then what is the use of your service? So you also have to hear how to serve. So you have to inquire, what is the inquiry to the spiritual masters? How can I serve you? What is our inquiry to Krishna? How can I serve you? We must know how to serve Krishna. We may think that Krishna, he wants me to become rich and famous so that when I'm very, very rich and very, very famous, then I can preach to the whole world and they'll all become devotees. But that may not be what Krishna wants at all. So therefore you have to understand through the pure devotee what is Krishna's desire. So it's true that service and hearing, they go side by side. But service without hearing is not necessarily a better qualification because there's a tendency to speculate, to concoct. See? Just like someone get Prabhupada Charanamrita water with salt in it. Isn't it? So if you offer the spiritual master Charanamrita with salt in it, then that's not very good. So one has to use one's intelligence. Use sugar.
Is inquiry from the spiritual master essential?
Inquiry is absolutely essential because without inquiring from the spiritual master, then that means that one has two problems. One, if you don't inquire, it means you already know everything, or it means you're very stupid. Yeah. One or the other. So, which one is it? Yeah. Isn't it?
What about if you find that you find it difficult, you know, when you're studying to reading Srimad Bhagavatam, reading purports, but you find that there's not many questions coming to your mind when you're reading.
That means you're very stupid. Yeah. One or the other. Either you know everything or you're very stupid. Bhagavatam should fill you full of questions. Isn't it? It should fill you full of questions because it's saying so many contrary things which are, look at here. One verse here you can spend the rest of your life questioning. Isn't it?
The questions, they're also answered as well.
Yeah, but there's many questions come in because that's, what is doubt? Doubt is a sign of intelligence. Prabhupada said that. If there's doubt, that means intelligence. One should doubt. It's not that you don't doubt. It means you don't doubt the authority. Yes, we don't doubt the authority, but we must question how things are working. Otherwise, just like if you join an airplane factory for making planes and you don't ask any questions, they're going to start wondering, isn't it? Or if you do an open heart surgery and you never ask anyone. I mean, if you go to any science, everyone's questioning, aren't they? They say, do I do it like this? And the professor says, no, that's stupid, do it like this. You must always question. So when you're reading, Prabhupada said, threadbare. You must read threadbare. What does it mean? Sarvesham. What does it mean? All types of what? What does it mean, all types of? All types of what? So this way you question. What is the dialogue between the sages of Namisharanya and Sutta Goswami? Questions and answers. What is the dialogue between Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami? It's questions and answers, isn't it? If there's no questions, they both sit there looking at each other. Then what's the point? Then we wouldn't have the glorious Bhagavatam. So what's your question? If you don't have questions, then it means the studying is not very good. You have to start. Unless you're reading the answers very clearly, and that could be there. then that means very intelligent.
When you're giving the example of the asses, Prabhupada's explaining that, or Bhagavad Gita is explaining that we shouldn't work hard like hogs and asses and dogs.
Like, yeah.
So, but we find that even if the devotee still has to work very hard, even for material maintenance. So, but Prabhupada's explaining that Krishna's made, given the whole facility, and we don't need to do that. So how does it end up in the devotee still having to work very hard for just simple maintenance?
Well, there's different reasons. I mean, of course, in somewhere like India, or even in Africa, we see that things are more available. You can live simpler. There's less... The complication of modern life is that it demands. Because this society was created by mudhas. So it's created in a way that unless you're a bit of a donkey, you can't really even get things done, isn't it? You have to work like an ass, just like these people are ripping up and down the motorway because they're mudhas, they're foolish. So it's just the way that the mechanicalization, this society is very mechanical. Everything requires hard work. Even though it appears they're making things easier, but they're actually making things harder. So the Vedic civilization was based on simple living and high thinking. So the whole system of Vedic culture was very simple, simplified. Just like we see that the whole emphasis of the Vaishnava way of life is very simple. Simple, there's no big description of big electrical pylons and huge mundane arrangements in the Bhagavatam. Rather we see that Kapila, he is the son of Kardamba Muni. Kardamba Muni is living in a hut, mud hut, with some straw on top. So such a great, powerful personality is living so simple. So, because life should be made very simple. Because life itself is extremely complex. The complexities of life are endless. So therefore, if one wants to get out of the material life, then one has to reduce the complexities. Otherwise, one becomes entangled in all these complexities of life. Therefore, one must simplify one's activities. So Brahman means simple, simply depending upon Krishna. So as much as possible, devotees should also try to do that. But for preaching, there may be a need to engage so many material things, machines, buildings, printing presses, computers, so many complex arrangements are made in order for the preaching. So if one is not preaching, then he shouldn't do these things. He should go to Vrindavan and chant and read. You see? There's no need to do these things. Don't become complex for the sake of complex. For preaching, you can make so many complex arrangements. But if you're not preaching, then don't live complex. Live very simple. So one who is not preaching, then he can become Babaji. Just hear and chant and depend on what Krishna provides. So that can be done. So only if one is performing devotional service, then should life be very common. Just like these householders, what are they doing? They're making their life very complex. But then they're becoming entangled in £800 a month mortgages, and they're getting this and that. Their whole life is caught up in a complex life. But that's not good, because then their whole time is wasted in these pursuits of some mundane arrangement. So we see that many examples of great Vaishnavas, they were living very simple. In the time of Lord Chaitanya, they were living very, very, very simple.
Does that instruction also apply to the Varnashram system, where people are working according to their different occupations?
Yeah, well, Varnashram Dharma was a social system and spiritual system, but it was also it was not based upon complex economic development. It's not that the Vedic civilization was to increase complexity, but it's a system that works. That the just like Prabhupada said, the Vaishyas produce food, but they are only allowed to sell any excess food. They don't sell anything which is not excess. The brahmana was to teach. His business was to teach. So the schools were run by brahmanas, but they didn't take any remuneration, no salaries. So whatever the householders would give him, that's what they take. So the only ones who were really in any way sort of a little complex was mostly the kshatriyas, the administration. And they would be trained up in how to administer society, how to protect society, to make public order arrangement and security arrangement and so many things. So therefore, in Vedic civilization, the kshatriyas, they would make complex arrangement to some degree, but even then, they would work under the direction of brahmanas. You can see that also in society, that the head is contemplative, the stomach, in a sense, is always consuming, but the hard work mostly comes with the arms and the hands, isn't it? People are making machines, they're making cars, they're making buildings, they're making this and that, all from the arms. So even in our society, that's true. So the kshatriyas, the arms, they administrators, there will be some complexity. But the general tendency was to keep things simple. Once you keep things simple, because life is very short. You're only here for a few moments. So if you make any complex arrangement, you can miss the point of life and again have to come back. There's no need. But people think that by making complex arrangement that they've achieved something, isn't it? By making some big arrangement, they think they've achieved something. You see? Okay, I think we'll finish here. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jaya. Srila Prabhupada Ki.